So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation, OU Insider subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton enthusiasts, and fans of the NBA champion, Oklahoma City Thunder. I just realized I'm not wearing my championship hat, and now I'm bummed and upset. I'm now a hat guy. I've never been a hat guy in the world in my whole life. Now I'm a hat guy. Because the Oklahoma City Thunder won a championship. And Brian, we're supposed to talk about OU, but it's been a week and a half, and the Thunder won the title.
Yeah, we can, we'll soak in this one for a little while.
I was in the building for game seven. I came back from, let me finish my intro real quick. This is another episode of the Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and the Rivals Network. My name is Jesse Crittenden. I'm joined, as always, by Brian Clinton. We are fans of the NBA champion Oklahoma City Thunder. And Brian, I came back from a family trip in Broken Bow. Girlfriend and I drive back from Broken Bow, get back to the city. Ryan Chapman and I go to Game 7. Thunder win the title. Get to soak in the surrealness of that of those moments and see the downtown aftershock that was just wild outside the arena. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, my girlfriend and I go to the parade, get to bask in all of that, and I gotta tell you, it still does not feel real to me. Being in the building for Game 7, going to the parade, mm-hmm. It still does not feel real to me that the Oklahoma City Thunder have won a championship. Doesn't feel real.
No.
When is it supposed to feel real? Because it doesn't.
Probably doesn't feel real until they go back-to-back next year. But
I love it, but I'm knocking on wood.
I don't know when it... I honestly don't know when it feels... I think with the fans, with Oklahoma sports fans in general, like over the last quarter century, there's been so many times where it's like so close to being there. Not just with the Thunder, but like that's the professional team that everybody's rallied around. For them to finally get it, it feels like this is like it's monumental. So I don't know. To answer your question, I have no idea when it's going to feel real, but hopefully not anytime soon.
I will say two things because I know we need to talk about OU, but to gear this to OU, I've never experienced a team of mine winning a championship. And for a while now, the Thunder have been the main thing for me. I've watched 90% of the games since 2012. Mm-hmm. I've been a season ticket holder the last 2 years. It would have been OU football for me, especially as a kid. I wasn't covering the team yet. I was gutted in 2017. That Rose Bowl sticks with me. Although people point to that one. You know what the one that actually guts me still? Just I was a fan and I remember it vividly and I was a kid. The OU title that could have been that guts me the most is actually 08.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I don't think people... Maybe because fans now don't... And I'm not... I just turned 29, so I'm not like... ancient, because I remember the 03 title game. I remember OU had a mm-hmm. chance in the red zone to win that game against LSU.
2008 was
2008, man.
Yep.
04, we don't talk about 04.
DeMarco stays healthy. Well, anyways, go ahead.
Right.
Go ahead.
That's what I've always said. If that game is not played in the state of Florida, and if DeMarco Murray is healthy, I think Bob Stoops has another title. Yep. 17 gutted me. But then as I've covered the team, if OU wins a national title while I cover the team, it's just not the same thing, right?
Right.
when everything that happened with the Thunder in 16, when they blew the lead against the Warriors, when KD left, I just thought the Thunder might never win a title.
Yeah.
And then they won it.
Yeah, they did.
They won the title. Doesn't feel real yet, but I still, the last thing I'll say before we get to the couple of things we need to talk about. I don't think people talk enough about how good that 08 team was. And actually in the grand scheme of the teams that made it far in the last 25 years and didn't make it, like OU was not going to win a title in 18. They were not going to win a title in 19.
Yeah.
17, they were damn close. 15, they were close. I don't think that team was good enough. 17 is a close second, but 08, I don't think people talk enough about how good, how really, really good that 08. That
03 team was really good, too.
Yeah.
That 03 team was really good, but
it was.
I don't know. 08 or 17 for you? What was the more gutting loss?
Well, I was in the Rose. I was in Pasadena for the Rose Bowl loss.
That's right.
So, personally, that one hurt worse. I think it was just, it almost felt going into that one that Baker Mayfield was going to will that team to a title. It just felt that way. And then for them to go out the way that they did, that one really hurt. But as far as like best overall team for OU and that, out of that stretch, I mean, it was 08 by a landslide. It was 2008 was, that team was incredible. And oh yeah, that one hurts.
The Mayfield fact, the Baker factor is a real thing that 08, that 08 team didn't quite have. Cause I think fans in particular, like I wanted Baker
so bad
to win it as much as I wanted OU to win it. I will say, and I'm getting off, I keep on getting off track. I was having a similar conversation with some people around the Thunder winning the title. And I was like, I think one thing that is unfortunately going to get lost to history is how good Jason White was.
Yeah.
Like, and it sucks because like his knees died on him and he didn't have the pro career. Right. Cause his body died. And he didn't get a title, which was a bummer. In terms of pure deep ball, I still don't know if I've seen an OU quarterback better than Jason White. I don't.
Yeah, he was incredible. He doesn't get thrown in that conversation often enough.
He was a legend.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's talk about a couple of things. And first, we need to talk about OU softball, because as soon as it looked like they were maybe done in the portal, they weren't done in the portal. Patty Gasso had another Go Boomer tweet in her, and that was adding Ole Miss pitcher Miley Wachino. And I reported to OU Insider members, it was lost in this whole transition between Rivals going to On3. The last day of the Rivals site, I reported to members that that OU was heavily in the mix for her, that she had visited OU, that UCLA and South Carolina were also making runs at her. I honestly thought it was probably a coin flip between OU and South Carolina, and OU gets her. And it's a huge get, because for a couple of different reasons. One, she has 3 years of eligibility remaining. That's one. You can build with her. And two, she was the number one pitcher as a freshman for an Ole Miss team that made the World Series. And there's a lot to dive into her game. Some of her numbers don't absolutely pop, but Brian, this is a pitcher that was a top 10 pitcher in the 24 class. I think extra inning softball had her at 9. Yeah. And now you bring her into the fold as a player you can build with. There's a lot of angles we could take with this, both with her and what it means for the team. But what was your reaction to OU getting in the mix for her and then ultimately landing her?
I mean, it's huge. The clear, I don't want to call it, the limiting factor of this team this last year was pitching depth. I mean, it just was like that was pretty clear and obvious. That's what kept them from winning a title. Offense was just you can't rely that much on offense, especially when you get into Oklahoma City and you're facing arms like Kennedy. And anyways, for them to go out after landing Berzon, for them to go out and get, help me with the name again.
Miley Wacheno.
Wacheno. What for there to go for them to go out and get Wacheno is huge. And yeah, like you just mentioned, I think the reason to get most excited about this is Shu was a freshman this last year. So you've got several years to see what she can become. And I would guess, especially with Jen Rocha pulling the strings, her best ball's probably ahead of her. And that's exciting.
I think the biggest thing to point to is she had an over 2-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio, which again, as a true freshman in the SEC, as the number one pitcher for a team, is really, really good. I think her opponent batting average was 2.23, and she had some ups and downs through conference, especially through conference play. That's okay given she's a true freshman. I mean, Sam Landry's stats did not jump off the page before she got to OU. They were good, but then she gets to OU and becomes a different player, right? I think the biggest thing for to add her is you, because you just mentioned not having an ace pitcher, like a true ace, as good as Sam Landry was, not having a Kennedy or a Pickens or a couple of these really good ace pitchers that we saw at the World Series. Like, yeah, could OU have used one of those? Sure. But the thing that cost them wasn't having an elite ace. It was depth.
Correct, yeah.
That's what cost them. And now OU rolls into next season with eight pitchers, which is a lot. It's a lot of pitchers. OU softball's roster, OU the Sooner Sports page softball rosters go back to 2017. As far as I can tell, OU has never had eight pitchers. I think they had seven once, but you get a lot of years where they've got four. They've got five. I think OU has basically landed this other direction. Instead of saying we've got to go and get that number one ace pitcher, which who knows? Maybe it's Wichanio. Maybe Berzon is awesome. Maybe Aju Lowry is awesome. Let's not forget she was hurt last year. She was the number two pitcher in the 24 class. So let's not forget about her. I think OU is almost leaning the other way and saying we may not have Nyjah Kennedy, but what we do have is potentially 4 to 5 to 6 arms that you have to prepare for. And we might throw two out in one inning. We might throw four in the course of one game in a weekend. I mean, we might do that regularly, and you have to prepare for that. It's an interesting, that's kind of the way it's been framed to me by a couple of people, is it's almost like a baseball style pin. And I actually think it's a really interesting zag. Or it's a really interesting guy. I'm listening to Bill Simmons' podcast too much. Not zag. I shouldn't say zag. It's a really interesting way to go instead of saying we're going to get this one ace pitcher. For one, I don't even know if that ace was out there. Maybe it's Berzon, right? I don't know. But I don't know. What do you think about that in terms of maybe OU didn't have the ace, but they've got the depth.
They can do it. I mean, that's all you need, really. I mean, I think with how the roster is already built, with the youth, I mean, just don't forget how youthful the team is. There's so much yet to come for this group. For them to have depth on that side, is there a Kennedy in there? Probably not. I mean, you may have some. There's some really, really good young talent coming up, but I think what you have there is enough good arms that you're not going to put yourself in the kind of situations that you did maybe late in the postseason, this year around, where you were forced to throw Landry. They don't forget it. You were really seeing Oklahoma forced into a situation where they couldn't trust anybody else in the postseason. And so I think you're probably seeing this staff learn from that, or just ensure that this isn't going to be an issue again, going into next year, and that's why this was such a big get.
Well, again, it's OU played four games at the World Series this last year, and Landry pitched all but 2.2 innings. I mean, even think about 2024 with Kelly Maxwell as elite as she was. OU wins that last game against Texas. They threw, I think, five different pitchers in that game before closing with Maxwell. It was clear early in the, excuse me, it was clear early in the postseason OU didn't want to throw anyone else but Landry. Like, even in the regional tournament, they didn't want to throw anyone else but Landry. And that was a bigger issue to me. And now I think you go into next season and Berzon's probably your ace, but there is gonna be a battle for playing time, man. And not only a battle, but I think Rocha is gonna have to figure out how do I get all of these pitchers innings, especially early in the year. Because I'm telling you, if everybody's healthy, Sophia Bordy's gonna get innings. Alyssa Parker's gonna get innings. Berkeley Zaki's gonna get innings. And I would be shocked if one of those freshmen aren't in the rotation. I'd be shocked if that isn't the case. And I mean, I think like you know what you're gonna get out. I know you know what you're gonna get with Kirsten Deal, at least kind of. That's it's their consistency issues are there. But I mean, they might get into next season where they're struggling to get Berzon, Wacheno, Lowry, Zaki. Like they're struggling to get all of these players innings. And now maybe Zaki redshirts or something, right? But they've already redshirted Bordy. They don't have a reason not to throw her if she's good enough to throw. I'm really curious to see how this is. OU hasn't had a pitching staff like this in a while where you've got a lot of quality arms, but you've also need to do some development. That's an interesting place to be. I don't know. I'm curious about where Wacheno ends up landing in the rotation next season. Can she be the number two? That, you know, that's what I'm
Yes,
wondering.
I believe so. But Lowry is going to improve. Like you just said, it's going to be a log jam for that number two. And there could be, I don't want to just jump to conclusions and say that Berzon's going to be your ace.
I kind of don't want to either.
I mean, as much as she has proven she could be, there could be an absolute log jam. Your third or fourth pitcher, your third or fourth pitcher going into the 26th season is, I don't think I'm jumping out too much on a limb to say, is probably a better option than your number two this last year. I
No.
think just with what they have as a t as in total.
That's why, I mean, again, like no disrespect to someone like Peyton Monticelli, who's probably just not going to be a big factor in the rotation next season. I mean, I think it's possible. I mean, Kirsten Deal only threw 77 innings this past season. She threw fewer than she did as a sophomore. She threw fewer innings than she did as a sophomore. And I think it's possible we get to postseason time and it's Berzon, Lowry, Wacheno, and one of those freshmen. And that's your top four. And they're getting, I mean, it's possible we get to the regional tournament and you get three different starting pitchers. It's possible we get to super regional and there's three different starting pitchers. I mean, I really think that's a situation that we're looking at. And if you can have that actual depth, maybe you don't have a 1.3 ERA in conference play type of player. Guess what? Most teams don't. So that's not a, but OU didn't have that last year and didn't have depth, and they were four wins away from winning another title. And now you're bringing basically that entire team back and giving them actual pitching depth.
Plenty to be excited about. Like that's no question.
Well, and as rough as it is to deal with Kennedy or Jordy Ball or any of these other pitchers, OU almost beat Kennedy. And the harder thing, they would have had to beat her again, obviously. But the bigger question, if OU had beaten Texas Tech and Kennedy in the first game of that semis, wasn't, oh God, they gotta solve her again, which of course wouldn't have been easy. The
Right.
hard thing would have been, are they gonna throw Landry again?
Again, right. Yep. And you probably, they would have been forced to probably. I mean, you probably, man, in hindsight, like, you probably, I don't know. That's tough. You probably are forced to, because I don't think you could, you turned a deal maybe in a couple of innings, but you're playing with fire because Texas Tech's offense at that point's hot. So I don't know. That's tough.
And then your reward, if you somehow get past Texas Tech again, is hey, you get a matchup with Texas. And you're in the same dilemma. Are you throwing Landry 98% of
Right.
the innings against Texas? I think OU is banking on, hey, if that Texas Tech series comes again, maybe we throw Burrs on game one, but hey, we're throwing Wuchenyo at you in game two. We're throwing Auji Lowry at you in game two. And you got to prepare for it too. I don't know. I think all things considered, like it hurts to lose Corey Hicks. I mean, it hurts to lose Hannah Kor. Sure, like those pieces hurt, but OU didn't have a devastating departure. They didn't lose anybody from their core, and they bring back basically the same team. And of course, it hurts to lose Sam Landry, but you bring back almost all of your returning production and supplement it with really good pitching depth. Pretty good place to be.
Pretty good.
Other thing, Brian, is one thing that's crazy is we are like 11 days from SEC Media Days, which is nuts.
That's nuts.
I will be in Atlanta. I'm going to Atlanta, going to the Omni Hotel where SEC Media Days will be. It was in Dallas last year. It's in Atlanta this year. And it's got me thinking about football. I've kind of still been in softball mode.
Same. Yeah.
We got to get into football mode.
Yeah.
And one thing, I think we're going to talk about all these position groups in some form or fashion. I wanted to talk about tight ends because that's the biggest question mark on the team. And we're not even going to talk about the state of tight end recruiting, which is, oh, what's a better way to say abysmal? What's a better, not abysmal.
Not great. It's
It
not, it's not, not good.
it's not good. It's not good.
Not good.
It's not good. Thank you. It's not good.
I'm here all week.
I don't have a thesaurus on hand. Just talking about what can actually be expected in 2025. And to me, part of this is in addition to you look at that tight end room and it's like,
Is exactly me.
it's meh, you know. But so one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you about it and why I wanted to talk about it on here is because bear with me here. I don't know if you got a chance to read my new column series that I started here at OUinsider.com. Not to self plug, shamelessly self plug. Critical thinking, which is a pun on my last name.
That's great.
I'm half proud of it.
That
I'm a
no,
little ashamed, but mostly
embrace it.
proud.
That's great.
I'm mostly proud.
Love it.
I came up with critical thinking, but then it was Parker's idea to do the CRITT with a dash for critical thinking. So we tag team that a little bit. Anyways, I found myself sort of sunshine pumping and I didn't even mean to, but I was trying to look at like what is I w my thesis was when you look at this tight end room, what is an expected level of production, or what is a realistic expectation of production, and is that realistic expectation of production going to be good enough in a highly productive offense? So I started looking at Washington State's stats from the last two seasons. Look at who their tight end is. Cooper Mathers. And I was actually shocked at what I ended up finding. And I don't know if I'm the first person. I'm gonna let's just pretend I was the first person to find all this out and nobody else did. Cooper Mathers, his average stats the last two seasons, I averaged them. I averaged them. 17 receptions ish, 17 receptions, 225 yards, and 3.5 touchdowns. That was his average season if you take his last two seasons and average them. So I started looking at what has OU's tight end room done? What have they done? What is their actual history of production? So I started looking at two guys, Carson Kent, and I was actually stunned. You know what his season? I don't know if you read this. Did you read this?
I go ahead.
Okay, sorry. I'm monologuing and I shouldn't be monologuing.
No,
I
go for
apologize.
it. Go for it.
His stats at Kennesaw State last season, 18 receptions, 217 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Almost to the decimal point, an average Mathers season. Then I found out that Mathers was originally a walk-on, wasn't even a scholarship guy. He was a walk-on that transitioned to tight end after he got on campus, after a full year under his belt. You know who also transitioned to tight end?
Who?
Jaron Kanick. So then I started asking myself, Brian, could Carson Kent or Jaron Kanick be the ghost of Cooper Mathers and give you a Cooper Mathers season, an average Cooper Mathers season? And if they did, is that good enough for OU to have an elite offense next season? I just monologued for a billion years. Let me stop talking. Do you agree with the premise? And is the does the premise have merit to it?
Yes, it does.
Please tell me.
You are not the first person to bring up Cooper Mathers.
No, don't tell me that.
I don't want to burst your
Don't
bubble.
tell me that.
We did talk about this in the spring. You may not remember it.
Dude, I have the memory of a goldfish.
So I'll jog your memory when we found out that Jaron Kanick had made the switch. We had kind of looked, started digging into some of the things that Ben Arbuckle's offense did in at Washington State, and one of the things was I hate to call them gadget plays, but like your tight end in that system is like an inline. I mean, he's very much like a fullback. Lots of blocking, lots of helping out with pass pro, but. Because of that, there are times when he slips out and gets lost in the fold and ends up busting off a big play. That's exactly what Cooper Mathers was for this offense. He wasn't a focal point, but he was just dangerous enough that you had to account for him. I think that's exactly what you could see out of whoever ends up starting for OU at tight end. The reason I believe that this offense can still be productive, even if they are subpar to bad at tight end, is twofold. One, I think Jon Mateer gives you just an extra level of playmaking ability. Anybody that can run around back there and extend plays allows guys to come open downfield. I mean, that's how football works in 2025. The other thing is Jaden Ott is a crazy, crazy talented receiver out of the backfield. I think that offsets. Yeah, to me, getting Ott shoring up that running back room that's been a mess, and adding somebody that can catch the ball out of the backfield in an offense that's already gonna move things around a lot, that's a win. I mean, that covers up your losses at tight end for me. So to answer your question, I don't think you have to be super productive. I think you can have an average Mathers season over the last 2 years, and be plenty good enough on offense to take major steps from last year.
I agree. I'm sorry, I have the memory of a goldfish and I don't remember that conversation. I also, the one thing I found out that I should have mentioned earlier when I was going through this stuff, Jaren Kanick listed at 6'2", 230. You know what Mathers?
6'2", 230.
6'2", 230.
That's right.
That's that's spooky.
Yeah,
Dare I
it is.
say, I know we're in July. That's spooky. We're not in
Oh, and
October.
one more thing, just to clarify. Carson Kent, not Clark Kent.
No, did I say Clark Kent?
No, you didn't.
Okay.
I'm just making sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's what if I said, and turns out both Carson Kent and Mathers from Gotham. They're both from Gotham. Wait, Clark Kent is Superman. Oh boy. Oh boy. What time is it? It's 9:10 on a it's the day before 4th of Oh boy. Gotham's Batman.
it's okay.
Yeah. Aquaman, he lives in the ocean. I don't know if you knew that. I
So
know.
off
He lives in the ocean. Where's Captain
rails.
America live? America. I know
America.
that. I know
Yeah.
that. I'm really glad you brought up the Jay Knott point because I actually ended up writing about that later in the piece. And I so this is not an apples to apples comparison. Even if Jaren Kanick and Cooper Mathers are somehow long lost relatives who are the exact same size and have the exact same backstory. This is not an apples to apples comparison. For one, Washington State is not Oklahoma. Oklahoma plays in the SEC. This is not even getting into the production you need from a tight end potentially as a blocker. We're not talking about the quality of the offensive line, right? I also think an
Yeah.
underrated part of this is you can get a Mathers season, I think, would be a godsend for this OU tight end group if any of these guys do that. It feels less like a godsend if the wide receivers aren't very good or if the wide receivers aren't healthy, right? Like that's also dependent on you getting like a great Deion Burks season or if Javonte Gibson is healthy and great or if,
Yeah.
you know, I think Jaden Knott is actually the biggest factor here because I mean, going through his numbers, I know we've talked about it a ton, but I actually think he weirdly is related to this tight end room in that some of the production that you would normally want from a tight end room, you can put onto Jaden Knott. This is a guy that caught
100%.
45 passes his freshman year. And to be honest with you, I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's realistic to expect him to catch 45 passes, but
No, probably not, but
I ended up putting over-unders at like, I think you should set his over-unders at 30 and a half receptions and 350 and a half yards. And I think he can and maybe should
yes,
surpass both of
especially
them.
if the tight end room lacks. I think that's your clear. If you have a creative mind at offensive coordinator, and it very much so appears that Oklahoma does, like that's an easy transition. Like you've got to make the most of the guys that you have out there. I don't see that being an issue if Ott is himself 100% healthy. Like guy should be a total weapon out of the backfield, especially if tight ends are struggling.
I'm wondering because I mean Kanick and Kent and I mean there were several guys that got a lot of snaps in spring, but there's a part of me that wonders if Ben Arbuckle ends up looking at this as like we need to take the guy with the highest floor, and then I wonder who is the guy that gives us that floor? Because Washington State, also the last 2 years, 6th and 16th in passing offense, and they did it without a prolific tight end or a Mark Andrews type of tight end. Like, could Carson Kent end up being the guy that's like, we know that we're going to get to the end of the year, and if he plays 400 snaps, he's going to catch 19 passes. He's going to catch 4 touchdowns. And does that end up I wonder how much, again, I'm just rambling. I very much apologize. I wonder how much this ends up being dependent on the state of the wide receiver room because we don't know what they are really being cautious with Jaden Gibson. We don't know what Javonte Gibson is going to be able to provide at least early in the year. Do you go for a high ceiling guy? Does that exist on this roster? When you start looking at like When you start looking at some of the guys on this, on the, in that tight end room, when you're actually trying to evaluate what they can give you, There's not guys with a ton of upside. It's guys that have injury history or not a ton of proven production. I mean, is there anybody outside of Kanik and Kent that is actually going to be worth taking a look at when the fall rolls around? Is Cade McIntyre, Caden Helms, like, are
I
those
mean,
guys?
I love what those guys could be, but it's so hard to it's so hard to project anything value there, like, until you see it. Like, it was really cool to see them be able to get I'm drawing a blank. You just Helms, Caden Helms, to get
Okay,
see
Helms.
him
Yeah.
get involved a little bit last year, but like, he's been injured the entire time he's been in Norman. So it's hard to place any bets with any kind of like real confidence, in those guys. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, both of the McIntyre has a really high upside, could be a weapon there, but you just have to see it come to fruition. And I right now there's just not a whole lot of confidence in that. So I to me it's probably Kanik or Kent. Maybe there's another guy in the fold and I'm trying to remember his name off the top of my head. I haven't looked at the
Huggins?
roster in a bit, but those are your two guys. I mean, as far as I would say who's gonna go out and start, those would be the two guys.
I actually, when I started looking at the tight end room, I started looking at the wide receiver room and was actually like, oh, there's kind of question marks in that wide receiver room too. Actually, like, if you're trying to, because the Cooper Mathers thing was my way
Will
of.
Huggins.
Well, yeah, that's sorry. I said Huggins earlier. I didn't know if that's who you were thinking of. I st like I don't even need the sunshine pump because I don't. That's not my job. And that's but like I'm like for fans. I think that the Mather stuff. I was trying to give some sort of sunshine pumping, but there's no way to work around that. There's question marks about that tight end room. But then I started looking at the wide receiver room, and again, I'm like, man. They need Deion Burks to play all 12 games and catch like 60 passes. Like
Yep, they do.
that's what you're gonna
They
need.
need both of the Gibsons to find their way back to the field soon. Like,
Yeah.
so.
And so that's why all of those answers actually all, when I started looking at all that stuff and even the offensive line and question marks there, like maybe Derek Simmons is awesome. Maybe Jake Mikla is awesome. You know, like all this stuff. But like all of it to me ended up coming back to like, is Jaden not gonna need to catch like 4 or 5 passes a game,
Maybe.
regardless of like all of that stuff. Is he gonna like, are we gonna need to get to the end of the season and he's caught like 37 passes? Because that's
It's a possibility. I mean, I would not be shocked. I mean, again, like you had the utilization. What's really going to end up frustrating me and a lot of Oklahoma fans is when Bauer Sharp is used properly at LSU this next year, and he's like actually pretty good.
I'm preparing fans for it's go it
It's
is
going
going
to
to
happen.
happen.
Yeah. I was so high on him whenever they landed him out of Southeastern. I was just like, yeah, he's got the body type. He's got the speed. He can go up and get the ball. Totally underutilized that for him. And when he is running wide open on the seam and making plays for LSU, just prepare yourself. The reason I bring that up is you had a good piece there that you squandered, and I just don't right now. I don't look at the tight end room and see a guy right now that even with what kind of athlete we know Jaron Kanick is, I just don't look at the room right now and see a guy that has that kind of upside right now. I just don't.
That's why I don't even know how helpful it is to even go back and look at past seasons. Cause even when I started trying to think about Jaden Nott's production, I again, so just like I looked at Mather's production, I looked at what did the running backs the last 2 seasons do catching the ball. You know what Wayshon Parker's their running back last season at Washington State, you know what he finished with like receiving wise? Can you guess how many receptions he caught?
Two.
What? You did the
100.
thing. You did the thing. You ruined the game. You jerk.
No, he had 20, 26 receptions.
11. Caught 11 passes.
That's not
Now,
very much.
part of that is that Jon Matera was the offense and he ran a ton and they had some guys that he could throw the ball to. But 11 receptions and 108 yards. Running back before that, Nakia Watson, 24 receptions. So, like, again, but Ben Arbuckle talking a lot about working his offense around personnel. Do you get a guy like Jaden Ott and you look at some of these question marks elsewhere on the roster and you go, yeah, we need to throw that guy the ball a lot. You know?
Probably. Yeah, because you're going to want to get the ball in his hand as often as possible. And you're probably going to lean somewhat on Mateer running. So I would imagine that's going to open up some, I mean, for lack of a better term, it's going to open up opportunities for Ott to catch the ball. So
Is there any way to positively look at the tight end? If I tell you right now that someone in that group finishes with a Mathers season, do you say that's a success and OU can have a top 25 passing offense if they get a guy that catches 17 passes and three touchdowns?
because I think at that point it would be supplemental. Like you don't need to have a you don't need to have a guy stand out at that position to be good offensively. But if you do, it literally takes things to the next level. Like that's the having an elite tight end is it's really nice, and I do not think Oklahoma's going to have that this year. Yeah, they can be really good offensively if they can get 17, 18 receptions and three or four touchdowns out of a tight end. I think they could be successful because there is a lot of meat on the bone elsewhere, as long as guys are healthy. Mateer makes the ceiling of that offense just so much higher. But yeah, I mean, if Kanick goes out and has that kind of season, or Kent or whoever it is, yeah, this offense can be way better than it was last year, and I would say prolific through the year.
Have you run out of things to say about the tight end room?
I'm sick of talking about the tight end room.
I've run out of things to say about the tight end room. OU fans, I've given you my recipe for feeling good about the tight end
Now
room.
watch Will Huggins come out and be an all SEC. It's
I
like, yeah, and then we just have to eat crow for 2 years.
know. Trenae Washington catches 50 passes next season. God. Again, nothing about him. He's a obviously highly touted guy. I've just like let's watch all of it. Look, we did anyone see 6-7 and one of the worst offenses of all time happen last season? Did anyone see that coming?
Not this guy.
Nah, I did. I certainly didn't. But let's stop talking about the tight end room and let's go to bed because it's late and the 4th of
Do it.
July is tomorrow. Happy America Day, everybody. Thank you for tuning in for this episode of the Oklahoma Drill. The Oklahoma City Thunder are also still champions and they will be forever. You cannot take that away from us no matter how much you try. SGA is not a foul merchant and we don't foul a ton. Actually, we do and we get called for them. The refs are not on our side. Anyways, thank you guys for watching this podcast. This has been an episode of the Oklahoma Drill. OUinsider.com is now part of the On3/Rivals Network.
That is.
Come become a VIP member today over at OUinsider.com. Make sure to like and subscribe here at this OU Insider YouTube channel. We will be back next week to talk about SEC Media Days and things that we are watching for. Again, the Oklahoma City Thunder are champions. Thank you, Brian, for joining us. We'll be back next week. Until then, see you guys. Have a good America Day and take care.